When I was in Seattle back in September, October of this year, I had a lot of really great opportunities to meet up with a bunch of ex-evangelical people. If you listened a few weeks ago, I actually dropped this as a podcast episode, the live podcast that Stacey Ray and I did on the 16th of September in the Seattle area. And one of the cool things about that was I met a guy named Jimmy Brower. He came all the way up from Eugene, Oregon, which was about a four-hour drive, to make it to the podcast, and he actually showed up right as we were getting ready to finish. But we ended up going out to lunch. All of us went out after the podcast was over, and I kind of overheard some of his story. He was talking to some other people a little bit further down the table, and I thought, you know what, this guy sounds really interesting. So I said, hey, Jimmy, man, how would you like to get together? He was heading up to go to work on an island up north of Seattle, a few hours north, but in about a week he was coming back through. So I said, hey, when you come back down through, why don't you come in and we'll do a recording? And he said, hey, that sounds really cool. So we did. We got together about a week later, and I sat down with Jimmy for a really interesting discussion. You know, and I didn't know what to expect from the guy. And as the conversation wore on, I'm kind of thinking to myself, is he trying to talk me back into becoming a Christian? Is he trying to talk me into believing in God? What's going on here? But as it turned out, though, that's not at all what he was trying to do, as you'll hear more in just a few minutes. I'm going to let him tell you his story. It's quite a fascinating one. What do you do with a person, though, who seems to have a really profound experience, emotionally, physically, whatever you want to call it, with God? And that kind of forms this unshakable belief. But then all these layers and accretions of, you know, theology and dogma and everything get laid on top of that. And then how do you sort of free yourself from the strictures and the structures of dogma? And at what level do you get into this question of certainty or certitude? Because that's a big one in evangelicalism and fundamentalism going back before that. Probably 100 years ago or so, there was this issue with the fundamentalists and the liberals, and the fundamentalists were so concerned that the liberal Christians were washing out and destroying the historic Christian faith that they kind of basically drew a line in the sand, and they said, look, this is what you must believe. You must believe, you know, these principles, propositions, fundamentals, whatever you want to call them, and if you don't believe those, you're not a Christian. And this is the legacy of fundamentalism has really stuck with us in evangelicalism. It's a byproduct of this reactionary movement, as I say, against liberal theology back 100, 150 years ago. And so we see this, and we're going to hear this in Jimmy's story. This is a person who has had a profound experience of God, but yet what happens when all these layers get added? And really, deconstruction, I've said this many times, it looks different for every person. It's not going to be the exact same thing for every person, and it's going to look totally different, and we react differently. Some of us who walk away from the church, some come back into a completely renewed, different view of God and the Bible. Some people jettison the whole thing altogether. There's been just too much in their past. Whatever their issues are, they can't reconcile any of it, and so they have to throw it all out, in a way, kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater. And this is something that Jimmy and I are going to get into. Is there even a baby in the bathwater? What's that all about? Maybe there's not even a baby, or maybe there was. Maybe there's a different bath. So I'm going to let Jimmy in a minute tell you his story. It's my hope that you're going to get something out of this episode, especially if you're in this process of deconstructing, but you're not exactly sure where you're going or what you're doing next. What's the reconstruction piece? Maybe it involves kind of this idea of coming back to a view of God. I don't know what that means, what that looks like for you. It's going to be different, as I say, for everybody. So I hope this is going to be an interesting one. One thing for sure about Jimmy is that he has definitely thought through these issues very deeply, but at the same time, he's not so dogmatic that he can't hold his beliefs loosely enough to where things might need to change. Then, okay, that's fine. Let's let it change and let's not be so dogmatic about it like so many people within evangelicalism and fundamentalism are, many of whom we've experienced in our lives if you've come out of the church like myself. I want to say real quick, before I get into the chat with me and Jimmy, I'd like to give a shout out to Sherry Palace, who was actually my guest last week on the show. She is one of the newest Patreon supporters of Mindshift Podcast. And I want to mention Steve Slocum as well, who is another Patreon supporter. And in fact, there's going to be an episode coming out with me and Steve in just a few weeks about his new book, which is called Why Do They Hate Us? It's about Muslim American or Western relations. It's an absolutely fascinating discussion that I had with Steve. And so I really appreciate both Sherry and Steve, not just for being great guests of the show, but also helping to support me because I guess they believe in what I'm trying to do. That's a good thing, isn't it? So if you choose to become a supporter on Patreon, what are some of the bonuses and rewards that'll be headed your way? Well, there's some really good stuff. You'll have early access to episodes on Wednesdays when they drop on Patreon. And there's usually some good bonus content, some behind the scenes recording of some of the people I've had on the show, some of the stuff we talk about pre-recording. And also I'm working on a course. It's an online video course called Reconstruction After Deconstruction. And I tend to put up these videos. I'm working on another one now about once a month. So you'll have access to those as well. It's a course that I'm designing that's going to help you to put your identity back together kind of post deconstruction. But we are going to get into some issues of deconstructing evangelicalism, the Bible, theology. So there's a lot of content that's going to be coming your way on Patreon as part of this course I'm doing. So it is my hope that that is going to help you sort of put some of the pieces together in terms of forming a new identity, which is hugely important after you've walked away, after you've deconstructed. Where do you go from here? And so that's really why I do this podcast, and it's allowed me to meet great people like Jimmy Brower. So let's go on into it. I want to bring you now this conversation that I had in Seattle back in September with Jimmy. So I invite you to join us as we dive headfirst into the mystery. I'm sitting here with Jimmy Brower. You've just driven a monster three-hour drive to get here. Where were you working? You were
working
up north.
On Decatur Island, which is one of the smallest of the habited San Juan Islands.
Yes, very beautiful up there.
Yes.
Near Whidbey Island?
No. Whidbey is kind of by itself. Then you go further up into the Salish Sea, up in the strait there, and that's where Orcas and Lopez and
Beautiful island, yes. San Juan Island. I was in the Navy in Whidbey Island, mm-hmm. in Oak Harbor. Yep, Joe Carver, as we used to call it. Yeah, that was a lifetime ago, man. So you drove 3 hours to get here, then you've got another 4 hours to go to Eugene. So you're going to be hardcore cannonball all the way home. You're going to be what? Monster energy, coffee, the whole thing?
A little coffee. I'm generally, nighttime is my time, so.
Nighttime is the right time, mm-hmm. as the song says. And mornings are not your time either. Now, Jimmy, you drove all the way from Eugene to be at our podcast. What was it, a week and a half ago?
Yeah, it was
a week ago?
A week ago, Sunday.
That was amazing. You came all the way in from Eugene on your way up to the islands up there. So thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
But now, off the back of our discussion, a little bit at the podcast, and then afterwards when we all went out to lunch, I heard some of your story, but I only overheard parts of it. So maybe we should just dive in. What's your story? Where are you at in terms of deconstruction, reconstruction, the whole package? Where are you at?
Well, obviously, where I'm at is a moving target because no one's done.
No one. That's true. Yeah.
We aren't.
We're all in process.
And even though it always feels like now we figured it out and this is where we are. And finally, after all these years, we made it. Now we get it.
We only know little bits and pieces, a lot of it.
And next year we'll say the same thing.
It's true. We're moving target. Yeah, we're in process. We're in the remodel phase forever, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah.
So my grandparents on my dad's side became Christians straight into Pentecostal church. So my dad's raised this way. My mother's parents, they were pastors, Pentecostal, same denomination. So then my mother is raised this way, and then I'm raised same in...
It's a common experience, isn't it? Your grandparents, your parents, and then you're raised in this evangelical Pentecostal system.
It's the normal kind of basically conservative up here in Seattle is where I grew up.
Right, right. So you're local to where we are right now. We're in Seattle at this podcast recording at the moment, but you're heading to Oregon anyway to go back home.
That's right. I live back in Eugene now. So my whole, you know, I prayed the prayer when I was three, and that's, and I meant it as much as a three-year-old can mean a thing like that. And it was as real as it can be for that person.
At that moment in time. Yeah. 3 years old.
And then, of course, my dad would try every so often to have me redo it just in case it wasn't quite real. Because, you know, it's a three-year-old or just a five-year-old.
Yeah, what does a kid know?
Yeah. So try again. Make sure. Make sure.
Just make sure, son.
And, it's, you know, somewhere around seven or eight or I don't know. My mom, I remember she told me, you know, one day, Jimmy, you're going to wonder if there is a God. And I was like, I don't know what you mean.
There must be a God. There is a God.
I mean, I was exactly to me the same as her saying, you know, one day, Jimmy, you're going to wonder if you have a left arm. And I'm like, Mom.
There it is.
It's right here.
I don't know, left here.
Yeah. Didn't make any sense. Yeah,
it's an alien words, thought. Completely foreign.
Because God is real. It was just so absolutely obvious.
Yeah.
And, but then, but, 12 years old, around there. You know, I didn't go to Christian school. I went to regular public school. I watched TV like everybody else.
You had pretty liberal parents.
Well,
see, I went to Christian school. I didn't have a TV.
Yeah, I heard that story. I was not quite that deep into fundamentalism. My dad was a youth pastor my whole life, but he was always a lay youth pastor.
He wasn't on staff,
he'd have a real job and do this for free.
Right. Yeah.
As a service.
Just a ministry type thing.
Right. Yeah. He just cared about kids. So I was, you know, sheltered to a degree. I wasn't allowed to watch Thundercats or He-Man.
He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Right, because he had the power. Not God. I have the power.
That's right.
No more for that one. No Smurfs.
Plus, he's very scantily clad. He-Man. Yeah, it's a bit suspiciously... barely a loincloth or Speedo, almost.
Very Speedo.
Very muscly with very few clothes on. Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of going on with He-Man.
Uh-huh. So, you know, that kind of normal thing. No all Christian music. That's the only thing allowed. That kind of strict. But but 12 years old, I'm going, wait a minute. I've never seen God. I've never touched, tasted, felt, heard.
Had a conversation with.
Yeah. So why do I think this stuff is true? I don't know. Interesting question. So I'm like, well, God, if you're there, you know where I am. Go ahead, do the whatever the thing is that makes this real.
Make it real.
Here I am.
Waiting.
So 2 years, I just stay in that place.
Kind of in limbo.
I don't know how this works. I don't know what it means. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know what the other side of this looks like. But I'm here, and just regularly. I remember laying in bed. Okay, here I am. Go. Now. Yeah,
something should happen.
Right. If there's really this God.
Pretty simple prayer.
Yeah. I have no idea. So I'm not putting any strictures on it. Do this one thing, make that turn blue or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm just like, do the thing, whatever that is.
Whatever that is.
And I don't have any, you know, like I said, I went to public school. I watched television. I had, you know, neighborhood friend kids. I didn't see anything around better. That was like, I'm just going to go be a drug addict and try that one instead.
Yeah,
they were just like, that. I'll just do my normal thing, be my...
Your normal self.
Normal kid, Christian, good kid thing, go to church, whatever. But at some point, this conversation is going to be over, and I'm going to go one direction or another.
Something's got to happen.
Right. I'm not going to waste my time...
Can't keep this up forever.
...with nothing. Right. So I'm not stupid.
Waiting for God.
So I don't know... How come I made it 2 years? But it was about 2 years, waiting. And surely things are happening in those 2 years from 12 to 14. That's a shifting of life.
Pretty formative years, too.
And in there, I start doing the most I ever did of trying to, you know, like, kind of pushing boundaries and being kind of rebellious. But then I'm at Christian camp again, like every summer. Still in this place of, you know, I'm open, whatever.
And you're still waiting for God
and
or something.
Some things start happening that I don't have any answer for, but they come pretty quick succession where my rational mind is faced with information that have that has no answer for how this could be unless God, whatever that means. And then my emotional self, the part of me that feels and is moved, something is like drilling into that. And without any, even, it's funny because they came in sort of separate interactions. I was interacted with in my mind, in my emotions, in my physical body, but sort of one at a time. It was like the emotional aspect of me, I was sitting there and the preacher was doing whatever he's doing, talking about something. And I suddenly was wrenched inside and emotionally undone because I knew there were people in the world that had no hope. They were living hopelessly. And that broke me.
Tore you up.
Tore me up. I ran to the front, you know, in the proper Pentecostal way, fell on my face, and I wept for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, bawling. I didn't have an intellectual reason. I'm doing this because of this and these facts.
Yeah, this is all lined up.
It was something inside was just being touched. Like, and then...
Very deep.
Yeah. Then as soon as that ended for whatever reason, then I stopped crying. Immediately, I start laughing. And I have nothing to laugh at. And no reason for laughing, and I can't stop. I try and make myself stop laughing. I'm making a scene. Can't do it. 10, 20, 30 minutes. Laughing. Something, it was not a rational thing.
Something inside
was being poked.
And you were laughing.
And I was laughing, and it was great.
Was the church into holy laughter, by the way, just as an aside?
At that point...
Because some churches really went in for that.
Yeah, this was 95, so it was existing around.
The Vineyard Movement in Toronto and all that.
So that was just getting started, but our little corner of Pentecostalism was still like, that looks a little wacky.
Not so sure about that.
Yeah. But whatever reason, this thing was happening in me.
Yeah, you're laughing and after crying for 20 minutes.
Then I'm laughing like crazy.
The pendulum swung from...
it was something, it was like I was being... interacted with from the outside, but into deep inside. And then, at some, I don't remember which order it went, but then I had this knee disease, which was a super drag. I was a 14-year-old boy. I want to run, I want to jump.
And you can't do either one.
That would suck. I can't walk upstairs.
Wow.
It's called Ashgood-Slaughter disease. It's pretty common. Your bones are growing too fast or whatever. Makes this thing. And it's like a funny bone that sticks out of your knee. So if you just tap it, woo, through the roof. Not fun.
That's sensitive, huh?
Yeah. So 6 months or something, I have this thing. And it's the kind of thing that it generally you get better. It finishes, your body
stabilizes. Literally grow out of it.
Right.
Yeah.
But I had it, and then these kids, just other random kids my age, they pray for me, and instantly, wham, better. I can punch. I'm punching my knees. I'm jumping. I cannot make myself hurt.
Wow, that's amazing.
Just try and figure, is this
real?
Seems
like a bona fide miracle.
Right, this is like, and it is instantaneous, not like, it's getting better.
Yeah,
it was, I hurt,
instantaneous
I don't
thing.
Hurt. Instant, because, and only change between here and there was these children saying, Jesus, make this kid well, and boom, done.
Apparently you did.
Right, so I have these things are lining up in this short period of time where something... external that no one else could impact and I couldn't have any control over myself are happening to every part of my being as a human being.
Physical, emotional, spiritual, whatever.
Mental,
yeah.
So
all there.
All the pieces of me have been impacted. And then this final thing that happened was that question, is there a God? God, are you there? The best way I could describe it was I couldn't find the question anymore. I knew the words, but I couldn't say them because it was similar to back before when my mom's like, you're going to ask. And I'm like, no, my arm's right here.
Arm's still there.
But now it was like the question wasn't there anymore. I couldn't find it. It was irrelevant. It didn't work. The question didn't work for me. And attached to that was this odd sense of being anchored to something outside of me. The person, Jimmy. And so the answer, just like if I read about Dr. Clint Haycock and I I listen to your podcasts and I talk to people who know you. I develop this understanding that there is a man that exists like this. But I could still wonder, I wonder if he's real. Is there an actor playing him? Who knows? But then I meet you, and then the question, are you real, becomes a non-question. I can't do anything with
that question. It's irrelevant at that point. Yeah.
You're sitting right there.
We're sitting right across from each other.
And it became, from that moment, it became like that. Now, there were these couple of things that were established that now nothing could alter because they weren't things I was clinging to. They had nothing to do with me. It wasn't me clinging to my beliefs and my dogmas and my ideals and my whatever. I could let go of everything, free-falling, and those things would still be true somehow.
Somehow, yeah. Because
they aren't connected. They're not mine.
Yeah, they're external somehow, but
right.
Nonetheless true.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Yeah. So that happens, and I'm like, well, there's the answer. I guess that's how you do it.
That's done.
That's how the answer comes.
It's obviously different for everybody.
Right. But this is how I got mine. And so at that point, I'm like, okay, well, now... So I knew there was... I'll have to put it in this language because we don't have other language for it. Yeah, there is a God. He cares for me, about me, in some kind of real, tangible way. Because each interaction with me was a demonstration of character. So if someone were to interact with you, every interaction is a demonstration of their character. And so every interaction you build... a concept for what their character is like.
Yeah.
People tell you who they are by how they treat you.
Yeah.
How they interact with you.
Exactly.
And each thing demonstrated to me the character of this God.
In air quotes.
Asking about, right.
Whatever it, he is.
Right.
Yeah.
So right after that, of course, now there's a God, and God is good in the sense of the word that is kind of beyond any other thing we can call good. And that is good and is good to me, towards me, always. This is the orientation of that God. So this is now my foundation that has nothing to do with me. Now that's true. Now I'm not going to go, great, see you later, and go do something. I'm like, all right, that's who you are, and that's, well, then now we're going to do life together some way. Now you choose me for something. I'm alive for some reason. I have something to offer the world. There's some way we interact the rest of these days I have. What is it? So I stand on this spot on the floor, and I scream at God, you choose me for something. I don't care what it is. Now that I found out what you're like, we're doing something.
This isn't the end of this thing.
No, this is the start of something. Whatever life looks like starts with this. And I just yell and yell and yell and yell like a 14-year-old zealot would there on that spot on the carpet and say, you choose me for something. I don't care what it is. And after lots of yelling and waiting, I get one, like a snapshot. Photograph in my mind, these punk rockers hanging out under a streetlight. Okay, good, done. That's all I needed.
Find those punks.
Those people, love them. That's my whole, this is what I get to use my life for, is loving these people. Seeing them be the best of themselves they can ever be.
The best punk you can be.
Yeah, whatever that means.
Whatever that means.
Just love these people. And it was not foreign. It was not that weird to me because my entire life, from tiny childhood to my earliest memories, is seeing those people and having this thing pulling on me. I want to just stand there with them. They're terrifying. I grew up regular, conservative home.
Yeah, Joe Church.
Right. Just regular, middle class kind of. But those people, even as scary and weird as they looked, I just needed to be with them. And it was this kind of background thing in my life growing up as a child. But then, so then when this comes, it makes some, there's some through line in my life. It wasn't just some foreign thing that's like, and now you must go to China. And I don't know anything about China. I don't care about China. It was something real and connected to who I am as a human being. That's the kind of thing that a real God who actually cared about me would do. So
one would hope.
Working. Right, you would think.
Something's happening.
So okay, great, whatever, that's my life now. So from that moment on, every dream, hope, plan, ambition revolved around how do I do that? So that all happens, that interaction with this God that's real. Because, when I was a kid, it was real, but it was all under the wing of my parents. It was theirs. I came to God through them.
Yeah.
If there was a real God, he didn't need my parents to be involved.
You go direct to the source, as it were.
So now I had this thing that was actually mine. But it came within this package. So I happened to be standing inside the package of modern American evangelical Protestant Pentecostal white church.
You're in the mainstream, literally.
I'm right there.
Couldn't be any more white bread.
Yeah. So it came. I was happened to be standing in that context while the interaction happened. Therefore, I have no. I don't know there is another context. I don't know there's anything else in the whole universe.
Yeah, you're in the bubble.
Besides this way of this particular kind of Christianity. So, obviously, I just assume that's how you do it.
Must be.
What else is there? I have no idea.
Exactly.
I'm only 14. So
what do you know?
So I just go on normal. That's okay. Well, God's real then, and now we just keep. We'll do church real good and read your Bible real good and do all the right stuff. And I've really always had this very black and white kind of personality, and really wanted to do things properly and do them well. Though I can procrastinate because I don't want to do something unless I'm going to be able to do it really well.
You paralyze yourself.
Yes, and I can be lazy and stuff. So I go on my way this way, but interestingly, if you're going to end up being around those kind of people, those are the kind of people that fall right through the very large cracks of the kind of life and lifestyle and worldview that I was trying to pursue, including all the American capitalist, democratic, all that stuff that goes along with all of the way of what it looks like to follow God and have a relationship with Jesus, all that stuff, all as a big package deal. And these people that was my life to love, those are the people that don't fit. So now I've got these problems I'm starting to face. The thing that I know more than anything is this is the people that are my people. These, I belong to them in a real, real way, but they can't fit in the place that I want them to be and the place that I think I have to be.
They're not going to be accepted, for sure.
Well, I mean, although, to be fair, my dad's youth group, they would have, real punks would come and find community and...
Yeah, right. And, so they would accept them on some level.
Yes. You would be expected to eventually shave your mohawk. And as you mature, you wouldn't do these sorts of things anymore, of course. We'll welcome you as you are at the start. But if you aren't maturing, then something's wrong. And, and maturing looks like this. You fit better and better in the box. I mean, there was at least enough sense to say you're not going to fit in the box from the start. That's
right.
Silly.
Yeah, there's no way they're going to fit there.
My upbringing, the churches I was in, and my parents and my family, the version of this box that they presented was a pretty decent version. I mean, it was real. It was genuine. You know, my parents and most all the Christians I grew up around were genuine. They were honest. They cared about me. They cared about other people. They wanted to do it right. They seemed to actually love God and be trying to know what it means to love God, love your neighbor, that kind of thing, seemed real. And it was demonstrated in an honest way, although they had these parameters that it had to stay within.
Still in that box.
Right.
However big the box may be.
Right.
You're in a box.
Yeah. You still got to do it right. But I'm going along into teenagehood and finding Christian punk bands to listen to, and still I can't listen to the real ones.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Still can't listen to secular punk, punk and rock.
But the music's in my blood. Like, this is what makes me come alive when I hear this done right. Something inside says, yeah, like that.
There's a connection there.
Right, it was real. It wasn't. But then I'm getting to be 18-ish, 17, 18, and a band, Crash Dog, they have a song, GOP, God's Own Party. And and one little line in the song says, Jesus a Republican? What a joke. And I'm like, but, he can't be a Democrat.
Yeah, he can't.
So now what do I do? I'm screwed.
Isn't Jesus a Republican?
Right. And it's like, they were right, and I knew it, but there was no way he could be a Democrat. So now I'm really confused.
So rocking your world.
Yeah, literally. I'm like, I don't know what to do, man. Because there are these things I know that are true, and there's things that I don't know any. I'm being forced to confront the fact that the things that I believe and that I've been clinging to and that I've been fighting for and defending don't work. They just don't work, even if they're right. This is the weird thing. They still seemed right, but they didn't work. And if they don't work, what do you got?
Yeah, nothing. You
know, if this gospel works for some folks, what's the point?
Yeah, but not everybody or...
And there are all these people that I, deep in my bones, care about. I love them.
Sure.
And this gospel does not work for them. They don't fit. They
yeah, that will. Version of the gospel.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't know that gospel, it's a version.
The Republican white bread.
I don't know it's a version. I just think it's the one.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
So now I'm stuck.
This is your paradigm. In other words, you're in which you're operating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's your worldview, whatever you want to call it, through which you're interpreting these experiences. And it's not, there's that cognitive dissonance.
Right.
Things aren't adding up. So what do you do about it?
Yeah. And right about that time, I was working at a homeless youth drop-in center that was really great in Eugene, which is still active, I believe. It was a really great place. People just got loved and they got needs met and they were treated with respect and dignity. And they were celebrated and delighted in, just shown actual love. And it was a great place to be. I loved going there. But this one guy, interesting fellow named Sparky, one day I saw him and he was reading this book, Christian Anarchy, by Bernard Eller. And I'm like, wait a minute. I need to read that real bad. So I read it. And for some reason, it was able to set me free from this weird dilemma I was in. Is it left or is it right? Is it right or is it left?
Yeah, and very black and white, as you said.
Yeah. One of the biggest things that Bernard did for me was set me free from that and go, no, that's on the same scale. There's left and right. They're basically the same. They're just mirror images of each other. And then there is the other, the holy, right? Something entirely separate. Something that people aren't going to develop for themselves because it's not created by people. Because we're not going to invent the same mind that built the problem isn't the one that's going to be used to create the solution. That really cracks the door open. So now I'm able to start seeing the world as bigger. So right around then, so that really shakes everything up and I get set free from a kind of stricture and structure that was keeping me from getting anywhere. But also right around then, the thing, like I said, those little couple few facts that were now no longer mine, they weren't things, they were revealed to me versus
experiences you had.
I figured them out. I didn't figure them out. It had nothing to do with it. It was shown. Which, to me, if there is a God, God necessarily has to be something entirely other than what we see in our normal human perspective. And the most logical place to live is agnostically. How could I ever, with this brain, conceive of something beyond this brain?
Yeah, and have it all figured out.
That doesn't make any sense to me. If there's something other, it's going to be so much bigger that I could never just logically deduce the answer. So
putting God in the box.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of theology does, though, really.
Sure.
It's ironic, but you look at like Aquinas and back in the medieval times, they had God, in a sense, so figured out that it was the box got smaller and smaller and smaller.
Right.
And that's been a tradition for centuries in Christianity.
That is such a terrifying thing to view yourself as at the mercy of something that you can't control.
I mean, God or
if,
the me past.
As a, if there is this God, if there is God that is God as we consider this being beyond, then I am this little peon that is literally at the mercy of that power.
Yeah, and he's all powerful. We're powerless, really.
So if I'm at the mercy of that, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
If it's just all I know is there's this other and it's way bigger than me, I need to real quick figure it out, get it packaged in a way so I'm not scared anymore. I need to get as much control over this situation as I can, or else it's just freaking terrifying. Unless that whatever other reaches into my world and gives me a peekaboo. Look, I'm actually like this.
There's nothing to fear. Peek behind the curtain.
There's nothing to fear. I'm actually for you 100% all the time in every way. If that's true, I don't need to figure out anything.
Yeah, so you're back to that. Well, that's kind of the experience you had as a kid, sounds like.
Yeah, I was just free to be a kid.
Yeah, because that burden was taken off your shoulders in a way.
So now, because the character of God was established, the reality and the character was no longer something I had to figure out or prove. I didn't need to do any work. It wasn't about me or my capacity to think or rationalize or argue or whatever. And the character was established, even though it was established within this culture that had to crumble and I had to find out this edge was no good and this edge of the box was no good and this edge was no good. Because the character and nature was established in the beginning, then as all the information came in that went against everything that I understood that to mean, everything that I believed about that, what do I do about it?
Rationally.
Yeah.
Theologically, none all of that, yeah.
That was not threatening. I mean, it didn't feel good and it was scary because everything, the whole framework that you're using is falling apart and is failing you. The framework is failing you. That's scary because you don't know anything else. And what does something else look like? You don't know. Because that character and nature part was so established and wasn't in my control anyways, I could face and go headfirst into the mystery because I trust for the hands that held it all.
You know, whatever it is out there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out what you're saying here. It sounds like, yeah, you're saying the strictures, the old framework of your white bread Republican Christian thing isn't working. Those things are falling by the wayside. What are you left with is something profound, it sounds like, which is not the experience of a lot of ex-evangelicals, is it?
Right.
Because a lot of them, when the system fails them or the theology fails them, they flush the whole thing, throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Right.
My friend said, I threw the baby out with the bathwater, and then I realized there was never a baby in there to begin with.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, so,
and that's totally understandable.
Like he was sold the bill of goods on the whole, all of it.
Right. And that is totally understandable to me. And I'm sure it would be exactly the way I would handle it also if it hadn't been for this other thing that happened first.
Yeah.
That
you had these experiences.
These experiences that
you couldn't deny the whatever happened.
Right. And things would come as new information came, like, you know, this understanding of what of anarchism. That, you know, that threw a wrench in everything. And then comes in more the charismatic end of Christianity. And I'm seeing, like, just weird stuff happen. Crazy stuff. All kinds of diseases and broken body parts and things being made well. And people's insides being made right. And broken things set good. And that's screwing with everything. And then learning about Hebraic roots and things and seeing how totally ignorant Christianity is of what came first, and that screwed with everything, and seeing the kind of weird dysfunction in church as a system, and just, you know, that screwed with everything and get rid of that. And
like,
I'm,
what are you left with?
Right. And I'm, things are getting built in, but the big, you know, the thing that we generally consider as church or Christianity in general or whatever part of Christianity you want to talk about, those things are coming all apart. And I got to a place where I thought, you know, Christianity really, I think it's like an operating system. You know, like in the days of DOS and Windows. Christianity was like
way back.
The Windows. It was
what you see, what you interact with.
The interface that made sense to you.
Yeah.
Because there's like a picture. And you make this little arrow go to this picture and you push on that button. You
click on that
and
magically something happens.
Yeah.
You're online and...
And it kind of works. Like, you can function within Windows having no idea what's actually happening behind the window. But it's not real. It's imaginary.
It's just an interface. That's all it is.
Right.
That you see. The reality is what's going on down in the hard drive.
Yeah,
and
all the ones and zeros.
Motherboard and all the binary language. And
yeah.
But you don't need to know any of that to make the computer work.
Right.
Or your phone or... The same analogy for driving a car, isn't it? You don't have to know how a transmission and a motor and all... Turn the key, go off down the road.
Until transmission breaks.
Yeah, until something goes horribly wrong.
Right, and then you're screwed. So this is what was happening. All the parts were breaking, and I'm becoming the kind of person who's like, well, that doesn't work, so I guess I'm going to figure out why. What's wrong with that?
Now you're going to investigate all the issues.
And things are coming into my path that I'm reconstructing with, and I'm finding things are true. But what happened was, it was like I was in a snow globe, and I'm a little guy in the snow globe, and I have all my precious snowflakes I'm holding in my arms. I picked up all the right ones. Everyone said, here, this snowflake is true.
This is important.
Yes, this snowflake is true. Okay, yes.
I got it.
And so I got them all in my arms, and I'm holding them real tight because they're so important. And then the owner of the snow globe starts shaking it, and I'm hanging on tight, and it's getting harder and harder to hang on to them snowflakes.
You're trying as hard as you can.
And eventually, you can't hang on anymore, and you got to just let go. And that's so scary, but you've got no other choice. You can't hang on anymore because too much is happening that doesn't, you don't have enough energy to hold these things forever. And all of my snowflakes go up. And now it's just this, I'm in this snowstorm.
Literally in a blizzard. Yeah.
And I'm like, well, there's this thing that I can't do anything about, that there is a God and loves me. So I'm just going to, I'm just going to trust instead. Instead of trying to control, I'm going to try trust. I put my hands out. Now my hands are out in the snowstorm, and slowly a snowflake will settle on my hand. Another snowflake on my hand. But I don't now fight for him again and cling, grab him back in.
Once I realize you have him.
That didn't work. I don't need that. I'm just going to trust whatever lands on my hand, great. I'm into it.
Just leave it
and
there.
And as long as it's there, I'll love it.
But it may blow away.
It may blow away.
Yeah.
And they would.
So yeah, you're not grabbing onto it.
Because that was fruitless and painful. So I'll start letting the snowflakes come to me and doing whatever I can with those, you know, each individual little facet of reality and truth and thing. And some of them, they stay for a time and then they go away. I spent years not reading the New Testament because for whatever reason, I somehow had this sense that whatever the Old Testament was, it was trustworthy. So I just read that. I would still go to church and stuff often. And if, you know, like, turn to Mark. Okay, read along, whatever. And I read all day, every day, Bible, all day. But I was like, I don't know what to do with the New Testament, so I'm just going to leave it over there.
We'll stay in the Old Testament.
I'll just stay here and start learning what this is about. What does this mean? What's in there?
There's and a lot then, in there.
Yeah, a lot of stuff.
I was an Old Testament scholar, see, okay. So I spent a long time studying the Old Testament and teaching it, yeah.
And there was tons of great stuff. But what's interesting is where I'm at right this moment is not at all where I was with the Old Testament at that point. At that point, it was just, you know, the literal word of God. I can trust it. It's all true. It's how
no
it
mistakes.
Happened.
Yeah, inerrant and all right. That. Yeah.
Inerrant, infallible. I knew that was. New Testament, I was like, I just don't know, man.
Because not so sure.
It was really hard to jive the two together, you know?
Yeah, it is.
especially the more you know about one or the other.
That's
so
true, too.
So I was like, I don't know, New Testament, I'll just do here. And we ended up moving in with some friends of mine who I grew up with, but now are converting from my same kind of stream of Pentecostal evangelical to Orthodox Judaism. So we said, well, let's just live like them. Let's just do it like they do it. See what's there. Find out.
See what happens.
Yeah. So, I mean.
Explore new. Path.
And live it. Don't just
be a tourist and.
Yeah.
Come in for five minutes, check it out, and go, yeah, this is cool. I know what this is all about now.
Right. Yeah. Try and actually do the stuff. Do the holy days. Do, you know, only light. Don't turn a light switch on Shabbat. You know, just do it. See what happens. So what's interesting, this was important to me to be able to stand here on this Old Testament and let that be true. But now, here I am over here, and that snowflake isn't in my hand like it used to be. It's different now. Now I don't look at that at all the same way. And there came a time where I shifted. Now for some reason, I was okay. I started putting my toe in the New Testament. Read John. Read it a couple times. Okay, well, let's read John's letters. Interesting. I like what he's getting at. And so it was a process. So
yeah, you're slowly dipping your toe in.
Yeah, taking bites as I can handle the bites. And not, you know, I didn't have anyone saying, you have to believe this and you have to start reading those gospels. And then Paul is telling you how to live and what to do. Do it.
Get on it. Yeah.
I could just go at my speed and let those snowflakes come as they come and go as they go. Because something outside of me was trustworthy. And I could, it was now like me and God could walk through this process together versus me being on my own trying to figure it all out again. Because I couldn't trust that. Like, I know I can't figure out lots of stuff. I mean, and if there's anything that's complicated, it's going to be this stuff.
It should.
Spirituality and the nature of reality.
It's mind-blowing.
Right.
So it can be.
Clearly, I'm not going to just figure it out because I'm so smart. But because I had that thing where something outside of me was trustworthy, I can go and it could be relational. And that's what I did. Spirituality became something I did relationally, where God was a relational entity, not just a, not a force, and not a distant omnibeing, but someone that somehow, in a crazy way, could be interacted with on a, what you could call a personal level.
Like personal level, whatever that means.
Yeah. So this got to be a relational journey that I get to go on. And so now, every time some new information would come that was just crazy, something that I never could have dreamed of, now I'm being forced to reckon with, this looks like it's true. And for a minute, it's scary and shaking. And then I'm like, well, interesting. That thing, is there a God? What is the nature of God? What is my relationship to this God? Didn't change. And so as things happen, no matter how hard or severe the shaking becomes, no matter what kind of information, whether factual information or experiential information, pain or success, none of that stuff has ever made an impact on those things that are not, because they aren't in the same, on the same plane as the chaos.
Yeah, it's a different level. Well, would you describe yourself as a Christian?
No. What,
because this is kind of the crux of the whole conversation, I think, is that what I'm getting out of it is, correct me if I'm wrong, but your deconstruction seems to have involved the sloughing off of all the strictures, as you kept saying before, of the Republican, white, Jesus, American, Christian, blah, blah, blah. And what you're left with was something profound that not a lot of people experience. I mean, I've encountered some ex-evangelicals who still believe in God, who still, but it's a radically different God, Christianity, whatever you want to call it, that they're left with. Well, of course, on that spectrum that we were talking about before, you know, you can go all the way down to angry atheist, angry theist, angry agnostic, or whatever. So where do you kind of see yourself on that spectrum?
Well, I mean, personally, I don't need that word Christian. I mean,
entomology.
Yeah.
We've gone from God to bugs.
Yeah.
Just that fast.
Etymologically, the word itself is not particularly helpful, I don't think. Where it comes from, what it means,
Do without the label.
Yeah. Lots of people who would know what my life looks like or what I do would, I'm sure, call me a Christian. And that's fine.
You're cool with that?
Whatever. I mean, it's annoying on the inside, but whatever, you know.
Yeah. You don't want to have anything to do with that white Republican.
Yeah. And I think
Trump evangelical base kind of Christianity.
So anyone who knows me knows that has nothing to do with me. And also, if you don't know me, I don't need to help you connect me to that by saying this is what I am. So the fact is, I think there's lots of stuff within Christianity, within evangelicalism, within pretty much anywhere you go, they got right. Because I believe God is alive and active, and there's nowhere else to be except within him. You know, in him we live and move and have our being. Where else, if there was a God who made everything, where would he have made it except within himself? There's nowhere else to go.
Nowhere else to go.
God is reality. If there is nothing except God, then it's all inside. So you can't get away. Doesn't matter what you like or don't like or what you think about it, you're still included.
But in your view of this God that's out there, this other, that's on another plane or whatever, are you saying, I think you said this before, that it's not about believing all the right things to get to that God? Because I think that's one of the criticisms of Christianity, certainly evangelicalism,
yeah.
is that in order to be a Christian, they would say, going, this goes back to the fundamentalists 100 plus years ago,
yeah.
that they boiled down what they considered the fundamentals of the faith mm-hmm. and said, okay, here are the irreducible minimums
yeah.
that you must believe to be a Christian. And if you don't believe them, you are not a Christian, period. Right. So that's, I think, this stream is still with us today, over a century later, mm-hmm. as you were talking about some of the things you encountered in your growing up. You know, it's all about beliefs and holding on to those snowflakes. And yep. you have to have them, man.
Yeah,
it's so
out.
Important. It's all important. Mm-hmm. So you've let those snowflakes go inside the snow globe.
Yeah.
What's your advice for people? I'm just wondering, what would you say to someone who's going through this similar maybe deconstruction to what you've gone through? Your yeah. beliefs have sloughed away, but you haven't thrown the baby out with the bathwater. It sounds yeah. like you say there's still a baby in that bathwater.
Yeah, maybe more letting the bath drain.
Instead of throwing it out.
And, yeah, and to see what's there. I mean, maybe nothing.
Maybe there is a baby. Maybe there's...
Maybe not. Yeah, so, I mean, I think that a lot of us, we have this other bathtub with nothing in it but water. And we throw it out. And we're told there was a baby in there, but... There really wasn't nothing in there.
Maybe there wasn't.
But the fact is, to your left is a bathtub with a baby. You know, like,
you got to get in the other bath.
Wrong bathtub. It's okay. If I let go of this, what happens to it? Am I creating this reality? And therefore, if I take my hands off, it ceases to exist? Or is this something outside of me? If I'm the one holding this up, then that's not much of a God. If it needs me to keep it real... then what do I have?
You've got nothing.
Nothing.
Well, it's a construct, isn't it?
Yeah. Of
your own projections or whatever.
So,
and a lot of people have said that's all religion is anyway.
Sure.
It's just a construct of our own wishes and desire. We make the God into the image of what we want.
Yeah.
Which I think is a lot of, I see that that's a truism.
Yeah.
I hear that a lot in worship music. One thing that struck me lately, I've been listening to some worship music on the radio, and the statements they make about God are so strongly worded. Mm-hmm. I think, how do you know that?
Mm-hmm.
That God is this and God is that and God's going to do this and God's going to, yeah. I'm like, how do you know that? You're so certain
yeah.
that that's true.
And that's a funny thing. What do you do with, if there is a God, like this thing that I can't get away from, I only am aware of it because this God opened the door to me for me to see in. It was not because I could figure it out. So yeah. now I have these things that I can be certain of in a way because they happened and I didn't figure it out. Figuring stuff out's fine. You can figure out a lot of stuff, and it will have some value often, but it only lasts as long as you can keep it figured out, or as long as the new information, just like every scientific discovery, we figured out gravity.
We've arrived.
Now we get it. But within that framework, you're right. Until you find out there's a bigger framework.
Yeah.
Now you gotta...
There's a bigger box and all that. Yeah.
You gotta find out. So there is a certainty... that exists, but the problem is we're going to experience a certainty within a context. And the context isn't real. It isn't eternal. It's just the context. And you can't get away from that. It's just what it is. And I think that's okay. It's okay to go ahead and be fully present with the context that you have and to live it as fully and as genuinely as you are capable of. So long as you, like, humility is such a huge thing. To be aware that I don't know, like you're saying, I just don't know, and that's okay, but to the extent that I can know, I do know. But if it's an open hand knowing, then you're safe in a way. It is true that I have experienced God this way, and so I talk about it that way.
Yeah, it's true for you.
Right, I talk about it in honestly. This is how it is.
Yeah, you're not making all this up.
And that's okay. We get in trouble so much because we don't allow for any more or any less or any other or any different than the context that we have so far.
A lot of the stuff you were describing, it strikes me of a description of a lot of the hallmarks of progressive Christianity. Mm-hmm. I was thinking about this today when I was at work, because I read a lot of stuff when I was first, I guess now I see it as I was deconstructing in a way maybe similar to what you went through. I didn't have those experiences per se, but I read stuff like Irwin McManus, Donald Miller, mm-hmm. Brian McLaren, things like that, Rob Bell.
Yeah.
And what that did for me, I'm seeing now, is it broke a lot of those strictures.
Mm-hmm.
That I was very much still a Christian, but those things sloughed away all the trappings of evangelicalism. I started seeing that there was a lot bigger table, as it were.
Yeah.
As John Pavlovich said, there's room at this bigger table
right.
for a lot more stuff. And it gave me the freedom to start to question things.
Yeah.
And once I started going down that road, then it led me to other places, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think your message, it's a good one for people who are in that place. Maybe they're still feeling like they've got all those strictures around them.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do? They've got all those snowflakes. Mm-hmm. They're holding on pretty damn tight, mm-hmm. man.
And the same thing goes for if where you're at is there was no baby. Humility is still essential to be a healthy human being.
That's true.
And you go ahead, if this is your reality, this is what you have experienced, that the really what you were worshiping didn't exist, be honest. Say it didn't exist. That's fine. And you can say, and I don't know of anything else that does exist. If that's what you know, fine. I mean, don't pretend one way or the other. It's equally dogmatic, however theistic or atheistic you get.
You can be, yeah.
You say,
just
nope,
as fundamentalist.
I figured it out. I figured it all out. There is no God.
Right. That's
just
the
how
story.
It is. Done thinking. My brain's locked down. Yeah. And my heart's locked down. I cannot experience or feel or think any other new information.
And that's the description of a fundamentalist from any religion
right.
as well.
It's just the same.
There is a God, and I'm not going to be convinced that there isn't.
Right.
You know, so that guy is just as fundamental as the person who's the rabid atheist
right.
or anywhere on that spectrum. So yeah, we got to have an open mind and open heart to this thing.
And it's okay, like... And having an open mind is not saying that I'll believe you if you say something. It's saying this is what I have experienced. This is what I have as far as information on my plate. And according to this, there is nothing else to think except there is a God or there isn't a God. And that's just
or
real.
Or we don't know. As you
or
said, maybe
no
the best
idea.
Way to live is to be an honest agnostic
right.
and just say, I don't know. I think that appeals to me because I'm not ready to say, that's a pretty bold claim when you go, okay, I'm a full-on atheist now.
Yeah.
There is no God, and that's it, man.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where do you go from there? I don't know,
yeah.
but I'm not, who am I to say there is no God?
Yeah.
I
right.
can't
yeah,
prove
yeah.
it. Ultimately,
right.
I've got a lot of problems with the God of the Bible and
yeah.
things like that, but I mean, that still doesn't mean that he doesn't exist.
Yeah.
He could be a cruel despot for all we know, but
right.
he may still exist.
Sure.
But yeah, the jury's out on it.
And it's okay. You know, I think it is still okay to say, I've got a decent amount of evidence. I mean, enough to fully convince me that there is no God. And be honest. That's where I'm at.
That's where you're at.
Literally, I
at
have
the moment.
This
yeah.
information. As
that's
far as I understand proof, this proves it. And then there's lots of people that are in that place. They have enough whatever they want to finish the... When this bucket's full, it's proof. And their bucket's full. And that's fine. I think as long as you be honest, and then... But you also say, and of course, maybe there's a bigger bucket.
Yeah, or a bigger bath with a baby in
maybe
it.
Maybe there's another bathtub I've never seen before. I just haven't got there yet.
Haven't got there. We're on the journey. Well,
I'm
listen,
on some
man.
Journey.
I've really enjoyed talking to you. I know you've got a long drive ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
How can people, though, before we go, how can people get a hold of you if they want to
yeah.
keep dialoguing with
sure.
you? What's the best way?
I have a Twitter, who's tired at tired of Xianity, TiredXianity.
So tired of Xianity, Christianity.
Yeah.
Yeah, so is Twitter the best way for people to get
probably.
A hold of you?
Probably. And then by the time this comes out, me and my friends are working on a podcast called Between Two Thieves, which probably will be out. I don't know when, but soon there should be a podcast of Who's Tired of Christianity.
All right, so you got a lot in the works. So
yeah
we're going to be
Twitter
interested.
Twitter works
hear.
Right now, and I just use to ask questions.
Yeah, yeah, we've had some good interaction. That's how we met
yes,
on Twitter.
Yes, I just found you on there. I was looking for people
yeah.
doing stuff that I think is interesting.
So social media is the way forward.
Oh, yeah.
It's the way forward, man. Well, thanks, Jimmy. And then this has been amazing. I've loved talking to you. I know you got a long drive ahead of you. Mm-hmm. So keep in touch on Twitter.
Good.
I'll put your links all in the show notes. Cool. And hopefully your podcast and all that will be coming out soon. And we can promote that too.
Awesome.
All right. Cool. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Deconstruction definitely looks different for every person. I think in the case of Jimmy, what strikes me about listening to his story, for him, deconstruction was all about sloughing off the, as he says, the strictures and the structures of dogma and coming back to what he kind of considers was this experience with God, whatever that meant when he was a kid. And while I didn't have those same kind of profound experiences with God as Jimmy did, I can definitely identify agonizing when I was a young guy over all these issues, these things that I was told were so important, I had to get them right. And the effect that it has on a person, especially a young person, it's so traumatic, agonizing and screaming and praying and crying out to God and worrying about all these issues and problems that you have associated from that, that come about in terms of your own mental health and your own development. That certainly cannot be helpful for a young person to undergo those kind of traumas. And then I definitely identify with Jimmy, and I think it kind of hit me partway through as I was trying to wrap my head around what his story actually was about. As I said, at first I thought he was trying to talk me back into believing in God and being a Christian again, but I realized that no, he's talking about going through this progressive sort of Christianity, and I could totally identify because it was reading books like people like by Brian McLaren, Rob Bell, Richard Rohr, Donald Miller, people like that, sort of more progressive Christians that first started me on my own journey of deconstruction because even though I was questioning these things already, when I started reading it in these books, it actually then gave me the language to go, okay, this is what I'm experiencing. These are the questions I've been asking. These are the things I've been thinking about, and I found it here in print. And what it does, I think, is it validates our own experiences. When you find something in print and someone said it, you actually are very empowered by that because you think, okay, I'm not the only one who's thinking this stuff. I'm not the only one who's gone through this. And I think that's why it's helpful to have conversations with people like Jimmy. And so as I always say at the end of pretty much every episode, I hope this has helped you think through some of the issues that maybe you've been struggling or wrestling or dealing with in terms of this issue of reconstructing your own identity post-church, post-Christianity, post-religion, whatever. As always, you can get a hold of me on Twitter at MindShift2018. Send me your thoughts and comments there. You can also find Jimmy at TiredOfXianity on Twitter as well. So you can get a hold of either one of us that way through Twitter. I just want to mention what's coming up next week is a really fantastic discussion on the same issue of reconstructing of one's identity post-religion. I'm going to be talking with Janice Selby. She's from Canada. She is a counselor who comes out of fundamentalism and evangelicalism herself. This is an amazing story that she shares. And then we're going to get into this issue of how, again, do you reconstruct after you've deconstructed all the trauma, all the grief, all the loss, all the things that we have left behind from our past life. There's a lot of stuff in there that needs to be dealt with before we can move on in healthy, productive ways. And then after that, as I mentioned, I'm going to be bringing you the episode that I did with Steve Slocum. We're going to be talking about his book, Why Do They Hate Us?, which is about Muslim-Western relations. It's an absolutely fascinating discussion. A lot of amazing insights that will help you perhaps understand and identify a little bit in terms of this interfaith dialogue or talking to people from different worldviews other than yourself. So this is a good conversation coming up with Steve after the chat with Janice coming up next week. So I hope you've enjoyed the dive into the mystery with me and Jimmy Brower. I will see you next week with Janice Selby right here on Mindshift Podcast.